Welcome to Soap, a story of the Tates and the Campbells, whose normal life is anything but normal, with co-hosts Tom Diamond, Vicky Ray, Jesse Fultz, and Keith Chalgo. Soap operas come and go, but there has never been a soap opera like Soap.
Welcome to the Literary License Podcast, and today we are still covering our soap retrospective, season 2, episodes 25 to 32. And before we get started, we'd like to see what we all have been up to, and seeing as it's just little old me and Keith. Keith, what have you been up to?
I watched a bloody brilliant horror film on Netflix called Blood Red Sky.
I saw that. I didn't watch it.
It's a, I think it's Russian. Now, the thing is, you can watch it with subtitles. You can watch it dubbed. We watched it dubbed only because I was a bit tired. Loved it. It's a really good movie. I suggest, give it a shot. It's got, it's about a woman going to America to get treatment and the plane gets hijacked.
Doesn't she turn into some kind of,
She's a vampire.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I watched the trailer and I thought that she was going to turn into some kind of virus kind of monster kind of thing.
Yeah. It's really good because, they went with the vampire makeup is more of the Nosferatu type with her.
Oh, which cool. I should watch that.
But you know, it's violent. It's got a good story on it. The boy's cute. Her son,
boy's cute. And violence and the boy's cute.
It's kind of like Passenger 76 meets 30 Days of Night, or Passenger 57.
Oh, really?
So it's kind of like a hybrid sort of film, but I really like that. And then I've been watching this Indian comedy written by Mindy, Mindy Carling, I think her name is. I have her last name wrong, but she did the Mindy Project. She also wrote The Office, The American Office as well. She's also in that. But this is about an Indian girl living in Sherman Oaks, California. Really fun. It's called Never Have I Ever. And basically she's just a bit of a bitch, and it's a good show actually. And her mom's like really strict, and really been enjoying that. And then, and I'm looking forward to Chucky, the new TV series coming out in October.
I saw that. Well, who's hosting that?
Well, Dan Mancini, who's done all the Chucky films up. He didn't do the reboot or whatever that horrible thing was that came out a year or
whatever
two ago.
Whatever that was.
But basically, it's a continuation of the series. So Jennifer Tilly's in it. Alex Vincent, the original kid in it from the movie, the original Child's Play, and he's been in the last couple of them. Fiona Dourif is in it as well. She was in the last two. So it is a continuation of the movie franchise. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I'm like, yeah. So I'm like starting to read up on that and can't wait to see that, because I like the Chucky film franchise. I mean, they're fun. And I like the way that it's probably one of the only horror franchises from the 80s that makes sense. You know, it's like the storyline continues on and on and on. It's not like Friday the 13th or Halloween storylines all over the place. I can't keep track of.
There's no continuity.
Yeah, there's no continuity. Texas Chainsaw Massacre has no continuity. You know, Nightmare on Elm Street, continuity is kind of all over a place a little bit. And I think out of all the 80s films, I think Chucky probably has the best continuity. You know what I mean? They keep bringing back. And there's even talks that Catherine Hicks might be making a surprise appearance.
That'd be cool.
So, but
yeah they are fun. They are violent.
Outside of that, setting up interviews and sort of things, and that's about it, really. So, what about yourself?
Not a whole lot at all. I've just got home from New York a couple days ago, and that was an ordeal, of course, because the planes didn't have pilots and the planes didn't have gas. So, anyway, That's just the way it is. So make sure you check your flights, people, especially if you're booking with Spirit or American Airlines, because they'll take your money and then screw you at the airport. They will.
They got that problem here is that people are going to Europe for holidays, and then wherever they are goes in lockdown, they're stuck there.
I'm telling you, it's kind of scary because you don't know. You just don't know what they're going to do. I mean, we think we know, and then fuck, there they go. There they go again.
Don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And even now we got this thing now that even if you've had your double vaccinations,
boosters.
If you're double vaccinated, and what's happening is that we have this NHS app that's pinging. So basically, like if you're in like a crowded place and someone gets COVID while you're in this crowded place, that everyone gets pinged, sort of thing. So that means that's home for 10 days.
Mass hysteria, panic, and the disco.
Yeah, but it's all, but the government's come up with this thing like, okay, well, everyone has to like isolate except for healthcare workers where they have to go to work.
Of course.
So the people who are actually dealing with people with immunosuppressive diseases and all this other stuff will probably have COVID and be working on these patients, but everyone else who has probably has no dealings with any immunopressive people or are very happy to stay home. So I don't,
right?
I mean, things are messy. Everything's messy. I don't think anything's ever going to be unmessy ever again. So,
yeah, I think it was Joe that was talking about full moon productions and stuff. Right. Well, Tubi's full of them. And I don't know how I let those little gems get out of my way. I watched one last night. Actually, I watched one before. They're like Killjoy movies. It's The Clown.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that. I've never actually seen one. But
I didn't think I was going to like it. But they're one of those movies that are so stupid that they're brilliant, kind of. You know, and clowns. I hate clowns. So why am I watching this? I don't know. But it's just funny as shit. And I mean, it's just a new spin on clowns and demons and stuff. The last one I watched where Beelzebub was not happy that he let a girl get away. So they put him on trial in hell and stuff like that. It's just funny. It's just good, clean fun. And they had a couple other things on there that were fun to watch. I haven't gotten through.
You got one about a killer bong.
The killer bong. I lasted 5 minutes, I think. I probably need to try again just because I have to. I hate it when I can't get through a crappy Ed Wood kind of B movie.
I think you just need to be extremely intoxicated and
high, which is not a problem. Illegal substances,
unless you're in the right state and illegal substances. So depending on what state you're in.
Oh yeah, which in Watertown, New York, it's okay to carry an ounce with you now of weed. It is not. You can go anywhere. You almost feel dirty. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble. They're going to see all this weed in my car.
Can you smoke it down the street or you just can carry it around?
Yep. You can walk down the street and smoke your joint now. Be like the big kids. Yeah, whatever. But not a whole lot going on. Just trying to get back to normal. Because when you leave for 2 and 3 weeks, you know, you got to come back to your house and the dogs need bathing and all that. Clipping and all that fun stuff and housework because I left Scott alone. And I think he left the mop and the vacuum out as trying to like, you know, sideways me. But I didn't buy any of it.
Do some cleaning.
Okay. Yeah, it's just like I was like, bullshit, you know, I'm gonna start pulling out the vacuum and leave it in the middle floor and look like I've actually done something, you know. Yeah. But
I've done some man cleaning where I might rub a dry rag across the surface somewhere.
But they're doing my street and it's just like a mess, right? And the dust is just coming in the house. And when I was in New York, they hit a gas line or something. Scott's calling me up saying, there's gas in the house. I go, well, get out. He goes, I'm out, but they won't let me go back in to get the dogs. And I go, you're going to be wishing that that house blew up on you if you don't go back in there and get my dogs right now. You know, so he calls the energy company. It's like, call the fire department. So I'm calling the fire department, pulled over on Court Street Bridge, basically trying to get the fire department down the street in Greenville, Texas to come. They did come to the house. All was fine. You know, nothing, just no one. Some guy approached the house with a cigarette like a dumbass. I just don't get people sometimes, but it was all good. The house did not blow up. Everything is here.
Still there. At the moment, we're getting like heavy rains. And so what's happening is everything's flooding because obviously during COVID, during the 18 months of lockdown, no one's been dealing with the drains. So it's like they're all flooding. It's like you'll get like a heavy rainfall for like 10 minutes. It's like, you know, the tube stations, everyone's like wading in water. And
they were doing that in Manhattan. When I was there, I saw that they were showing people there. I would not try to get on no effing subway waist deep in New York City. God only knows what's in the water.
Sewage water anyway that you're waiting
on. Oh, man. It's got to be bloody disgusting. And
what the worst thing about it is like you got all these people like, oh, no, COVID is like, well, to be honest, hepatitis is going to be a lot worse when you're waiting around in that dirty water. The least of your worries.
We have to worry about that. We got monkeypox on the way. Yeah, you can't do nothing to scare people, the Delta variant. So we're going to release monkeypox. That one just about put me. I was laughing when I saw that one. They're really not going to go there, are they?
I don't know, but monkeypox seems to affect the African population. So yeah, so I imagine that if it does hit, that basically there's going to be all these like conspiracy theories that's like this.
I saw Germany was having these massive mudslides. It's like everybody's going to shit. California and Montana are burning. They're blaming on climate change, but let's just say what it is. There's no forest management going on ever.
That's the problem. I mean, same thing with like the mudslides and the floods is that everything's been on hold for 18 months. Now, the thing is, what should have happened during lockdown? I mean, let's be a bit serious here is that probably everyone didn't need to go in lockdown. If something happens, you're working in sewage systems or drainage or forests or something like that. Chances are you're not working in a group of people. So you probably could have still continued on with your job. So,
yeah, it's not like I would say that forest management and everything else prevent mudslides and just wiping out whole townships would probably be what you call, you know, one of those jobs you need to be at. So it's essential, I'm assuming.
Precisely. And it's like when our lockdown finished, you get all these people protesting. The lockdown being lifted here in the UK. And then, so you're watching it, and these guys go, oh, this is a horrible thing. You know, we know about lockdown. We need to stay in lockdown to protect people, blah, blah, blah. But then when they interviewed the people, they were all people who basically were on furlough. So they didn't want to go back to work. So it wasn't about like lockdown for their health safety. It's like they didn't want to go back to work. They didn't want to be paid by the government. So it was funny.
I don't blame people. I mean, they're paying them more here in the States to stay home than they were making, you know. No. But they're going to have to do that. I mean, there's help wanted signs everywhere, just all over.
Well, that's the same thing here as well. And the thing is to be honest, if, you know, I know a lot of people are complaining that, you know, they want to go to Europe for holiday. But to be honest, I think that, you know, everyone's economy is hit really, really bad because of this. And I think that basically if you want to go out and spend money and go on holiday, that maybe it's best that you probably stay in the country and get the money rolling through your system sort of thing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we all might be screwed.
A lot of stuff in the UK definitely, you know, like take Stonehenge for interest. They actually rely on tourists, you know, to come in and, you know, a lot of UK is
maybe it's just best to get a lot of, instead of like a lot of foreign people, you know, going to look at it. Maybe it's best that UK people who live and breathe here basically start going to these places instead. In the short term, of course. And then, I mean, the world's going to get changed and stuff like that in next year or two.
We're going to have to learn to live with
it. And then take your trick so that way you might not be stuck somewhere. Because a lot of people are being stuck. They'll be like, oh, look, I'm holidaying in Spain. Yeah, I can't leave.
Yeah, I won't touch Spain. There's just no way.
It's everywhere, though. It doesn't matter where you go. Italy, Spain, France, you know, wherever you're going, it seems you could get stuck there at any given moment. You just never know. So, it's not going away anytime soon.
I think
they just have to break us into it so that way it's going to be part of our lives. And then once it becomes part of our lives and we become used to it, then it'll never be another lockdown again. It's like, screw it.
Natural selection.
Survival of the fittest.
Yep, just like you said, natural selection.
Well. Yeah, let Mother Nature take its course.
Yeah. Oh well.
Well, if Mother Nature wipes off a couple billion people, that will also serve, that will also help them with the whole, you know, world problems as far as the environment.
I know. Well, it's just, you know, the people don't understand that the planet is going to survive us. It will.
Precisely. The planet will do anything to survive, and we might just be, you know, something that needs to be written off.
So. We're just that, we're parasites. We just are.
Precisely. You know, I think there's a line in Sweeney Todd is, you know, the world is full of shit and we are the people that inhabit it. We claim basically that we're basically the flies on top of the shit that, which is the world.
So. We're trying to cheer me up.
Yeah, what can you do?
Anyway,
I just live my life. I just reflect on the past and the present, look towards the future, and don't worry about it.
Yeah, I got everything I need here. Yeah.
If I get struck down by a car tomorrow, it doesn't matter. I mean, let's face it. As far as films are concerned, I mean, that's all. I've seen everything anyway because I've seen the originals.
So. We're not going to miss much when we crap out.
Every TV show or movie I watch, I pretty much know what the outcome of the plot's going to be. So it's kind of like, eh.
Well, after a while, you get to the point where you know where it's going. You just do.
And any heroes that you have are all failed. I mean, they're like failed and crumbled. And it's all, I don't have any heroes anymore. That's the point.
I know.
Everyone I look up to is now basically below me. It's like, okay.
Yeah, there's no heroes anymore. We need a couple of heroes.
And any heroes that I have in my youth, they're dropping off like flies. It's like...
People are just dropping off. The one thing I've noticed about getting older is people you outlive.
Yeah. Well, they're old. I mean, you know, if you look at people like David Bowie and people like that, I mean, they're old. They're like in their 70s. I mean, okay, I know we go, oh, they're so young, but are they?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're in your 50s, 72 seems young.
Well, yeah, it does seem young, but it's only because we're trying to outrun our own mortality. It's like, oh, that's really young. It's like, no, it's not really.
I know. Everybody needs to buy Balance of Nature.
Most people die.
Balance of Nature. 70. Use code word LL podcast to get 35% off.
If you listen to the Literary License podcast and join up with our subscriber list, we'll ensure you that you'll have 10 extra years of your life. And if you don't, try to find us and sue us.
Yeah, we'll be dead by then too.
Our operators are on call now. 1-800, you're fucked.
Yeah. That's about right, man. That sums it up.
Precisely.
And with that, we're going to cut into our tub sequence where it takes us to our very own soap announcer, and that would be Keith doing episodes 25 through 32.
And this is a synopsis for Soap, season 2, episodes 1 through 8. Danny is frightened as Mr. Lefowitz threatens to kill the Campbells if he runs away from his responsibilities to Mary Elaine. Mary finally decides that she would have been more devastated if Bert had been the one to die instead of Johnny. Father Tim tells Corinne that he is leaving the priesthood, but refuses to be intimate with her until they are married. Jody is convinced by Carol that they should live together, but Dennis resurfaces and announces that he wants Jody back. Jessica admits to Chester that she's scared about what the jury might decide. Malou tells Jessica that he's in love with her, and Jessica's found guilty by the jury. Peter is revealed to have been murdered, and not by Jessica, but by either Chester, Jody, Corinne, Benson, or Bert. The Tates and Campbells insinuate back and forth between them concerning who might have murdered Peter. Chester attempts suicide due to his grief about Jessica's situation, as well as his own, but only succeeds at giving himself a bump on the head. Jody and Carol move in together, and Bert and Danny's help. Dennis brings a housewarming gift, causing Carol to experience some jealousy. Mary is concerned about a comment Jessica makes, which implies that Bert might be having an affair. Jessica is told by Malou that he will do whatever it takes to exonerate her and tells Benson to put on a strong face in light of her situation, for everyone else's sake. Tim and Corinne visit Tim's mother, who is distressed by Corinne's encouragement of Tim's leaving the priesthood, that she puts a curse on the both of them. Jessica appeals to the real killer to step forward before the judge pronounces sentence. Jessica is sentenced to 50 years in prison for the murder of Peter. Chester confesses having murdered Peter, explains to Jessica that he will repress all memory of the murder, but it came back to him when he got bumped in the head during his suicide attempt. Jessica urges the children not to stop loving their father. Chester gets put in the same cell with Dutch, another convicted murderer. Burford convinces Mary that he is not having an affair. Chester is visited in jail by Jessica, who is subsequently bullied by Dutch into helping him escape. Danny tells Jody that his attempt to fake impotency didn't fool Elaine. Carol is pregnant with Jody's child, but doesn't yet have the nerve to tell him. Chester and Dutch overpower the guard and escape. Bert asks Danny to be his partner in the construction business. Danny faces wedding day with trepidation as he tests his wife to be Elaine. Most of Danny's family agree that Elaine is, in fact, detestable. Elaine is also found detestable by her mobster father, Mr. Lefowitz, who surprises everyone by announcing at the wedding reception that he wants nothing more to do with her, emotionally or financially. Carol tells Jody that she's pregnant. The Tates learn of Chester's escape. One by one, Benson, Billy, Eunice, Corinne, and Jessica all disappear into the basement. Jessica gives Corinne advice about marriage. Chester's going insane from being cooped up in the basement. Tim and Corinne face a series of obstacles on their wedding night. Mary tells Bert that she wants to go back to school. Bert and Danny hatch a scheme to tame Elaine. Chester has a seizure. Dutch runs away, but rather than tell the police the truth about their aiding and abetting the two escaped criminals, the Tates plant the subconscious Chester on their front doorstep to make it appear that he only had just arrived and pressed the doorbell. Chester is taken to the hospital where he remains in a coma. He is attended by Dr. Cantor, who suggests his brain surgery. Eunice discusses her feelings for Dutch with Jessica, who has mixed emotions about it all. Danny follows Bert's advice to kill Elaine with kindness, implied to be a reference to Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. Jody proposes to Carol in order to take responsibility as the father of their expected child. Tim and Corinne are shocked at Mrs. Flotsky, who has a history of claiming that Tim's independent choices will kill her, as he does drop dead. Danny and Bert find themselves a target for seduction by the construction company's secretary, Sally. Chester needs brain surgery because of a tumor, which turns out to be what has caused him to kill Peter and then forget all about it. Tim, still reeling from the death of his mother, concludes that he's cursed. Mary is pleased that her college professor, Professor Martins, is showing an interest in her, but Bert is cursed. Dutch romantically climbs in Eunice's window to be her midnight lover, despite the fact that he is still fleeing the authorities as an escaped convict. Jody and Carol find their marriage plans vigorously opposed by Dennis. Bert tells Elaine how Danny really feels about her. Mary suggests to Danny that he might try being nice to Elaine. Danny and Elaine see each other in a new light, and Chester survives the brain surgery but loses his memory. The Tates visit Chester in the hospital. Jody and Carol tell Carol's father, Mr. David, that her pregnancy and their impending marriage. Elaine reveals to Danny why she acts the way she does. Bert and Mary talk about why Bert works so hard, and Sally continues to attempt to seduce Bert, but still to no avail. And that is the synopsis of Soap, Season 2, Episodes 1 through 8.
And welcome back to our rinse cycle, where we discuss the good, the bad, and the downright comedy and drama of Soap. So, Keith, what do you think about these episodes?
I have something to say that this episode, there's so much funniness going on, but there's so many tender moments.
Yes, there was.
You know, Dinah Manoff. My hat's off to you.
I know
she's my internet girlfriend now since our interview with her, and if you haven't listened to
everybody's interview, always your internet girlfriend.
She's my internet girlfriend.
She's a sweetie.
She personally asked me to marry her via Twitter. I accepted it. The reality, you know, so in our fantasy world, yes. But but I have to sit there and say that the heart-to-heart when she tells Danny about her,
why she's mean
was quite heartbreaking, actually.
I thought so too, because, you know, I even think that kind of resonates with other people who are always told they're not good enough, you know, put the comedy aside, but, you know, there are, that was really, I mean, I was like going, give me tissue, you know, yeah, it was sad.
It really touched me.
But she's so good at being so bitchy. I mean, she's just funny, because you got this rack of episodes where Danny's trying to change her and there's nothing good enough for her, reverse psychology. The poor woman gets her dress ripped off every time she appears on the set.
There is one point there where he goes, when she's in her slip, and he goes, wait, wait, there's something. I thought, oh no, he's going to rip off her slip now. But no, he the pillow off the chair.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess another thing is like that when Danny marries her, and I guess they did foreshadow this a bit, because when Danny marries her, he goes, I want nothing more to do with you, and you're financially cut off. Can you imagine your own father doing that to you?
Yeah, and it was, you know, that you don't really know about it actually till like this last episode in this block was like episode 32, I think, sort of in the middle, where she's explaining, you know, her father, her sister had died, and she was 16 in a car accident. But the father had told her, why couldn't it have been you? You know, and I've seen people actually do that to people, and not many, but I've seen that happen. Yeah. And God, man, can you imagine? Talk about, I'd rather be hit in the face with a pipe wrench than have someone, you know, say, I wish you were dead instead, kind of thing. But it was really
hard. I have to say that the writers did a very good job, because it actually explains everything. Mm-hmm. That little speech she gives explains everything about her behavior and everything, the way that she is, because you would build up a brick wall. Don't get anyone close to you, because they're, you know, she was close to her mom died. She's close to her sister died. She thought she was close to her father wanted nothing to do with her. So you would have this rich exterior. So,
yeah, but that was a really good sequence in this event. But he did marry her because he was afraid that Lefkowitz was going to kill the Campbells if he didn't. So there was that little, you know, inspiration to marry her. On top of that, Bert told Mary that she might have been better off if he died, I believe, as opposed to the other ex-husband. But they really don't explain, I mean, what he was really into. I don't know if that comes later, because I can't remember.
Well, I think, to be honest, it's hinted that he might have been working with the mob, because when Danny was working with the mob, they said something about, oh, like your father or something to that.
Right.
So I think it's all kind of closely knitted to that. But we know that he wasn't a very nice person, that he wasn't very nice to Mary.
No, he wasn't. And you got Father Tim leaving the priesthood for Corinne, you know, which is really kind of funny, because I went to Catholic school longer than you, and I think we all had a father. What a waste. You know, we had one. And I always laugh about it, because you all had the sweet little old father over here in this confessional. And then you had Father What a Waste over here. And all of us girls were lined up to talk to him and confess all of our evil sinning. So I get it.
Well, I'm not Catholic, but I was going to confession. Hello.
That's another podcast.
You go five Hail Marys and go, what's that?
Oh my God. Yeah. Five Hail Marys, two Our Fathers, Glory Be, all that stuff. Like, it's going to send me to heaven.
I didn't know
heaven.
Any of those. So after I did my confession, I go, I don't know those. Can you sit down with me and help me out? And he would.
Do I know this priest?
Father Harry.
Oh, Father Harry.
Yeah. Father What a Waste.
Father What a Waste. That was Father Remigio for us. That was Father What a Waste. He did leave the priesthood. He had this really black curly hair and these big blue eyes. It's like, boy, you do not need to be a priest.
Yeah. But
anyway, he used to sweat coming out of there after we were done with him, though. That was always just like our little form of immortality. But let me see. Jessica's being found guilty by the jury after her lawyer, Malou, tells her that he's in love with her.
Jessica, I mean, what an endearing
dingbat.
She's a dingbat, but I think that's what happens when you see the good in everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, she does have this
wonderful
Anne Frank look of thing that everyone's good at heart sort of thing. I mean, and there's an innocence about her, but when something bad happens to her, it really breaks your heart. When she goes, I didn't do this. Is there anyone that wants to
fast help me, please?
Yeah. But the look on her face is like, you know, and it's like, you want to laugh, but at the same time, you're touched emotionally by that. So it's kind of like, it's kind of weird, because you're kind of torn between wanting to laugh at the ridiculousness of it, but you're really pulled into the way that she does this character. was brilliant.
Yeah, she does do it well. And yeah, I love the interaction between her and Benson. Robert Guillaume is just epically epic in anything he does. I love him no matter what he plays in. But
when she tells Benson, it's like, don't cry, you need to be strong for everyone. It's
yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And it's to take care of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, son. I mean, when they take Chester to the hospital and they go, I don't like to look at his eyes. He goes, no, you don't like the color of my skin.
Oh, I know. They're trying to arrest him because he said he killed Arnold the rat.
And automatically they go to him. He's like, I don't like looking at your eyes. No, it's the color of my skin.
My skin, yeah. Because I still don't like the color of his eyes or the way his eyes are. Love that cop. That was funny.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
But Peter was murdered. It just wasn't by Jessica. But was it? They left off episode 25 with Chester, Jody, Corinne, Benson, or Bert that could have done it. But considering it was Bert's son, Bert probably wouldn't have done that. So it's like who shot JR, kind of, because then you had to wait to season two to find out.
But I think this is before JR, because I mean, this is.
Yeah, it is, because I think Dallas, what did it? Oh, I was still in high school. It had to be 81, because my friend kept saying, Kristen did it. I know she did. And we were still in high school. So it had to be then.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, what, 1778, something like that?
79, around there. Yeah, it was still pre-80s.
JR. So they actually foreshadowed the whole JR thing, so it was quite interesting.
Then Chester tries to commit suicide due to his grief about Jessica. Remember, he's trying to put that rope up in the kitchen.
And then Bert comes in and goes, let me sharpen those knives for you.
And then the knife ends up at the door. I forgot how fun the show is. I mean, they put it on Tubi, thank God, because it's so much fun. I just can't tell people, whether you were, you know, alive in the 70s or not, there's just, you can't, this show would not happen in this day and age. It just wouldn't.
Well, it's kind of a shame because I think that all the issues that we're dealing with now
are covered.
We were dealing with all those in the 70s and so on. I mean, God, look at the songs in the 80s, you know, whether it's Depeche Mode, People Are People, or, you know, Let's Make the World a Better Place, and all the other crap that but all the other songs we had out about that. Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation, you know what I mean? You know, it's
like, we are the world.
And all these horrible things that we like, oh, it's only for today. But no, we've been going through this for ages anyway.
Yeah.
And what I like about soap is that everything in it is very universal. And it's like, and even though the styles and the way they're dressed might be like very 70s looking, but everything that they're dealing with is very, very modern.
And it's still relevant. It really is. I'm not sure Jody's situation, but...
Well, even with Elaine's father, when Jody meets Elaine's father and he goes, okay, I support you and stuff like this. And then Jody gets up and he goes, I don't want that. You don't ever bring that faggot into my house.
I know. That kind of took me back because I don't hear that word often anymore. And when I hear it kind of like, and I go, wow, you could never do that now. And I mean, show the president, because back then we were just pre-AIDS, right before the real vitriol started. Mm-hmm. And it was, they addressed it, but Jody's so good natured about it throughout the whole thing. And I know a lot of, especially gay men, not so much the women, but they just take it with a grain of salt most of the time. If it bothers them, that you don't see it so much.
But, well, another thing is, though, that if you bring it in today's standards, there's a lot of people that still think that, but they don't voice it. Mm-mm. And I thought that was quite, for me, I found that quite interesting, because the thing is, he wasn't voicing it. He was sweet as pie. But as soon as that person walks out of the room, boof, out comes the real. It's a bit like PCism. It's like everyone talks about PCism and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm we are the world. I equal rights for everyone, blah, da, 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 da. But as soon as the person who's not the norm walks out of the room, all of a sudden it's like, They're the ones using all those slangs and all those horrible terms.
And he was saying, well, you have to be civil, the father is saying to her. You have to be your father, you have to be civil.
And isn't that what PCism is today? It's like, you don't know what people are really thinking. You're just getting what people think, how they react. But you don't know what's going on behind it.
No, you don't.
And I find that more dangerous than, to be honest, I'd rather hang around a racist than someone who's a PC.
Covert.
Well, no, because at least with the racist person, the person hates things and is really ignorant for whatever reasons, at least you know where you stand with them. The person who pretends to be worldly, and basically is the racist, but you don't know it because they're worldly. They're the dangerous ones for me.
Right.
Because you don't know where you're
sitting. That's true. So, you know, well, then you got, well, I don't know if you call Jody and Carol moving in together a mixed marriage, soon to be family kind of thing, because he, but then you got his boyfriend, Dennis, who is what, the quarterback?
Quarterback.
He's supposed to be the handsome, like Tom Brady of that day, and he's gay. His marriage didn't work out, and he's telling Jody, well, if it even looks like it's working out, I'll make sure it doesn't. So you have, you know, the mean, nasty over here, but it just happens to be a gay male and not a jealous female. So that I thought was kind of interesting how that's going to play out.
We got Jody caught in the middle because Carol's jealous as well.
Yeah, he's got
Carol's jealous of the gay boyfriend, and the gay boyfriend's jealous of Carol.
Yeah.
And now Carol's pregnant.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, but we only did it one time.
All it takes is once.
Yeah, clearly Jody enjoyed that one time, I guess.
Well, I don't think you need to enjoy it. You just need to do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, he did have that little moment of, you know, oh, you poor thing, you know, and he's hugging her, and then one thing leads to another.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, this is something that you probably, I mean, this is probably something that's a bit dated because he decides to marry her because it's the right thing. I'm not quite sure we would have that today, sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, getting married because you're going to have a baby, it might be for all the wrong reasons, because I got married after Justin was born and it was really one of the biggest mistakes I ever made. There's nothing wrong with not getting married. You do not have to. Sometimes it's better for the kids, you know, because sometimes you're just not, it's not going to click. Things change. Children make people snap sometimes.
I don't think that people realize, you know, I think that you have this idealized Hallmark version of what being the perfect family is, and that basically brings you together. But children are actually a lot more stressful. So if there's a stress going on in the marriage, the children are not going to help that stress much. It's going to impound it. I mean, my parents married because of me. My mom got pregnant for me and they got married, and that didn't work out. So, you know, my dad, when he got remarried after my parents divorced, that was a happier marriage because that was more of a marriage for love, not for a marriage because of doing the right thing. Maybe. I mean, I'm glad they got married because, like, I love my sisters and stuff like this.
Right.
And my life would be different, you know, if things didn't work out that way. But that's what you did. But
we're hanging on to that little semblance of puritanical thought process, maybe. You know, it's like, well, he deserves both mother and father, you know.
Well, and then there's also the thing about what, you know, there used to be a lot of stigmatism with single mothers as well.
Back in the day, yeah, there certainly was. I mean, even in the 70s.
Yeah, I don't think that ended until like the later part of the late 1990s. And then,
well, even in the 80s, well, there were so many girls that had babies in my high school, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't think nothing of it. We didn't. I don't know what the adults were thinking at the time, but we didn't think nothing of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, if you think about the 70s, they're still throwing them off into convents to have their babies, and then, you know, they go
early 70s. They were,
yeah, they leave fat and come back skinny. It's like you lost so much weight in those breasts of yours.
I know. Well, it was such an embarrassment. And speaking of priests, you know, you got Tim's mother. Who? What's the actress? I'm going nuts.
Doris Roberts.
Yes. Oh my God. You want to shake her, but you love her at the same time because she's that, you know, it's like that typical, sort of like in Saturday Night Fever. The mother is real upset. We got a son. He's going to be a priest. Your path is paved in gold to heaven. And then some slut comes and screws it all up. And she's just not having any. Poor Corinne. She's trying to be so nice about it.
And then the mother hates her. I guess they're Italian.
I'm assuming. What's his last name? What's Tim's last name?
Because you don't really know, but she does act like the Italian.
She acts like an Italian. But I mean, you could get that from the Irish too. I mean, anybody that's like Catholic, you know, they're going to. I mean, I just wouldn't want my kids to do that. I mean, I wouldn't hate them, but I wouldn't like it for them either.
Well, could you imagine though? It's like, you know, let's sit there and say that your mother's like that. So you've done everything for her because she, you know, feigns she's going to kill herself if you don't do these. So you do everything for her. And then the one time that you basically stand up to her, she dies in the middle of your speech. This time I'm living my life for me.
And then she falls back and you think she's faking it. And Corinne's going, she's dead.
I think she's dead. No, she's faking it. She always does this. No, she's dead. Corinne's excellent here as well. Diana Kavanoff. Kavanoff is fantastic.
Poor Diana Canova. She's never going to have sex again. Because Tim feels so guilty.
Yeah. But then, of course, John Chester goes up and says that, you know, we find out that he's the one that killed and goes to jail and becomes Dutch's bitch.
Yeah. Dutch, you know, it was really funny. He used to play Philip Chancellor on The Young and the Restless before Mrs. Chancellor killed him off. She run him off the road and he died of internal bleeding. I remember this stuff. No one ever talks about these old Young and the Restless thingies. But that's why I thought it was funny when I saw him on there. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot about his part in this. Because Dutch is actually a lot of fun when you think about it. And then him and Eunice start having an affair because she's really attracted to this bad boy. Yeah, that's where I left that one. I don't know what happened. I don't remember what happens. I haven't seen all these in so long. But Chester gets forced by Dutch, basically, who's another, he's a convicted murderer too.
Yeah. Because I can't believe they locked me in here with murderers, but Deonnie, murderer too.
I know. And then Jessica's trying to tell Mary, she goes, my news is bigger than yours, you know. She goes, Jody's going to have a baby, or, you know, he's having a baby. But she goes, well, I've got two killers in my basement. You know, see.
Well,
the best
thing is like when I love the interchanging between the two sisters, between Jessica and Mary.
Yeah.
Because Mary, you know, oh, I got bigger news to you. So they're going back and forth. Who's got the bigger news? And then you get Mary goes, oh, Jody's going to have a baby. And Jessica goes, Dennis is pregnant.
Yeah.
and then she says that, and then she says they're about the two murderers in her basement, and then Mary goes, oh yeah, your news is bigger than mine, and Jessica goes, well, your news would have been bigger if Dennis was pregnant. So I thought that was I love their interchanges when they sit there and just sit there and talk about each other's lives. They try to like outdo each other about whose life is more messier.
I think my favorite part of all these episodes that I watched, like, I cranked four of them out yesterday, is when all the women are at the kitchen. You got Eunice, Corinne, you got Jessica and Mary, and they're all, she brings that ring, an apple ring over that she baked for Chester, and they all end up eating it, talking about their lack of sex and that they're all horny. They just haven't had any in a while, so they start eating all this food.
You know, for the time period, I think this is probably quite revolutionary in its
that women actually have sex and like it and miss
precisely
it.
Yeah. And the lack of it. And I mean, there was quite an honest conversation. And I was like, when I was watching that, going, God, this must have rocked the television world at that time, because you didn't get women talking about.
No.
I mean, what did you have? Mary Tyler Moore, she didn't have sex.
No.
Rhoda,
I don't think she ever
really
had
sex.
I don't,
you
think
know, all the family.
Sex.
Well, outside of Eve getting raped, I mean, there's no. We don't think there's any sex going out there. So if you look at all the sitcoms around that time, sex was there. Was like it was skitted around a little bit. Like Maude would skit around it, but they never went into like this.
Well, the Golden Girls. What was that? More 80s.
That's 80s. Yeah,
that's more 80s because Blanche. Let's face it. You know, everybody dogged on Blanche though.
Well, I mean, you have to remember, Golden Girls is written and produced by the same people as the show. So.
Right. Which you could tell, they got the same composer for their music, too, clearly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love Susan Harris. I think she was a brilliant writer for what she did. They did go after topics that, we, like I said, are still relevant today. That's what makes them so good. That makes this still funny. You know, but you got, I can't remember why Bert convinces Mary that he's not having an affair. Why is Bert? I didn't catch that one for some reason.
Well, the reason being is because what happens is that Mary goes and talks to Jessica and says Bert's never home. He's working late. And Jessica's the one that plants the seed. You know, goes, oh, mate.
That's right.
I don't think he's having an affair, though Chester always worked late and he was having an affair, even though the stock market closed at 4:00. But I'm sure that Bert's not having an affair, which kind of was basically
That's right. And you had, let's see, Danny tells Jody his attempt to fake that he couldn't have sex with Elaine didn't work. Poor Elaine, for the first episodes of this, you see Danny's just like, Elaine, you're killing me.
Well, I mean, at the wedding, when they're talking about that, oh, she's a pig.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it was so mean. Huh?
And you got everyone coming in and they don't know what the joke is, but they're just laughing.
Yeah. But they eventually all get it, though, towards the end.
Yeah.
But that was really kind of mean when you think about it. But the fathers is the one that started that word. I have a hard time going, oh, there's some women, I guess, that could be that word.
Mm.
I can call someone to see you next Tuesday easier than a pig. I don't know why. But then you got Jessica.
Well, pig is not normally something that you would say about a woman. It's something you didn't say about a guy, isn't it? So it's very
rare.
Woman.
Yeah, it just seems kind of like my husband more off color.
The guy's a pig.
Yeah. Seems more off color than the word cunt, quat, which flow out of my mouth, fluidy, you know, that just rolls off my tongue all the time. I have no problem with swearing, obviously. Mm. Well, let me see. Chester gets to the same. Okay, we got, let me see. Chester and Dutch overpower their guard to escape. But you know he's always pushing Chester first. He's always making Chester do the dirty work, like jump out the window or jump over the side. Because if you've seen the prisons, you've seen bigger prisons. Those are pretty damn high up, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and then he asked Chester if he's good at knots. Okay, then you try it first. There you go.
I know. I love Dutch. I just think I think he's what the story needed. I love how they. I mean, it's true. If you watch it, I mean, then you get Chester. He goes into his coma and he has a brain tumor, which probably led him to, you know, kill Peter. And the funny thing about it is because that actually is going on in General Hospital. Somebody had a brain tumor and was a terrorist and a killer and everything else. But he's walking around Port Charles all over the place. And everybody loves him now because it was a brain tumor, you know, but that's what they do on soap operas, comas, brain tumors, baby switches. You know, I mean, that's what's so fun about soap. It's just, you know, beating the hell out of the soap operas, which I love. So don't get me wrong.
Well, I think the funny thing is that when they do arrive back at the Tate's place and basically everyone disappears in the basement because that's where Chester is. And if you notice, Chester's the only one that's tied up. The rest of the family are not tied up at all. They kind of go there.
Yeah, I noticed that. I'll keep going into the alcove or getting pulled into the alcove.
Yeah, so you know, Dutch is not worried about the rest of the family. He's just worried about Chester.
He just didn't want Chester to go.
But then Chester becomes friends with Arnold.
Arnold the rat.
He becomes his best friend. And then, of course,
he teaches him to scurry and to eat cheese. And then Benson brains him.
And then he starts complaining about headaches. And then, of course, he has a birthday. Is it his birthday that they bring him all the
time? I think they were bringing him pets because he felt bad about the rat being killed. So everybody was bringing him cats. The general brought him that fake Doberman. I was falling on the ground. That's why I was texting you. Have you watched this episode yet where the fake Doberman? I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know why the general, that guy just kills me. He's inopportune or something like that. He's just there. And he like jumps through the windows, you know, like a commando during Jessica's trial. It's like, and there's obviously no consequences for him. They don't put him anywhere. They don't jail him. They don't put him incarcerated in an asylum, nothing.
You know who it reminds me of? He reminds me of, you know, Mary Poppins. And you have that guy on top of the house.
Right.
And he's like, oh, it's 3 o'clock. So they all have to like hold on to everything because he fires off his cannon.
Yeah.
For whatever
that's right. Like, that's right. Oh my God. I totally like forgot that. Yeah.
He's kind of stuck in World War II.
I totally forgot about that guy with the cannon. That's funny. But they do kill Elaine with kindness. We were talking about that. Poor Danny's trying to. Well, poor Danny. I was feeling sorry for Elaine because she got down to her yellow raincoat because there was just nothing else for her to wear because he kept stripping her down. This isn't good enough for you. That's not good enough for you. He won't let her eat. And even Mary's feeling sorry for her. and just say, just be nice to her, then maybe things will change. That's when they have that heartfelt conversation.
Well, she has a nice moment with Bert as well.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, Bert was like, you know, and then she starts setting the table. Well, Bert's actually, when Bert's crazy and he's funny and so off the cuff, but when he has his moments, he does have a good moment with clarity. And, you know, he has some common sense in there somewhere. I love Bert. I can't wait till he gets abducted by aliens. So, Jody finally proposes to Carol.
Yeah, which, you know, that's not going
to
be good.
Yeah. Well, according to Dennis, it's not going to fly. And Mrs. Flotsky dies. So her name's Flotsky. That's Polish, maybe?
Polish, yeah.
Well, they're they might be big on having a priest in the family.
Doris Roberts is brilliant, though. I mean, wouldn't she? And everyone loves Raymond as well.
Yeah, yeah.
She's done tons of things.
She's done tons of things. I couldn't even begin to name them off. I had to look it up. But she is just one of those. I don't know if you want to call her a character actress or she kind of is. She's just.
Whenever she appears, she tends to take over the scene and do.
She's very vivacious. She really does command. Her presence is commanding. It just is. She always has been.
And Chester then basically falls out flat, lands on the turtle. Billy goes, of course he'd fall on the turtle.
Of course. But,
basically, they find out he has a brain tumor, so he takes it to Dr. Cantor, which
Dr.
I thought was
Cantor,
funny.
The butcher.
Dr. Cantor goes, okay, we don't operate and he dies.
Right.
Or we'll operate and come out with the brain of a codfish. Or... or operate and he'll die. So yeah. Which one would you like?
Well, he wanted to operate because if he gets the brain surgery right, he'll be in all the journals, you know, because he did whatever with him. But every time he does something bad, he goes, "That's good, isn't it great?" You know, and he's just proud of his improper behavior.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine having going to a doctor like that?
Yeah, I'm sure that there's some out there with some weird bedside manner. The kids had a pediatrician here. I think he's still practicing in the McKinney area. He used to always wear those clown feet when he'd come in and stuff. Mm-hmm. He was just really good with kids. I assume he's still working. He was fairly young, so he's probably still out there. But you never know with doctors.
Well, Chester comes out of his coma and basically he thinks he's Gloria Swanson or Gunga Din.
Gunga Din, yeah, Mr. Din.
and he has amnesia, so he doesn't know who anybody is.
Yep, except that Jessica's got a nice rack, and she's got red hair. I thought for sure she wouldn't be sex deprived if he was moved back into the house, but apparently there's still some issue.
I mean, Mary decides she's going back to college, and we interview Professor Martin, who seems like a bit of a lech.
He is a lech, but I mean, I don't know, but back in the day, I don't remember. I know that it probably went on, you know, people dating professors they shouldn't have been dating or whatever.
Well, but, I mean, to be honest, it's probably very, the way that they made it sound in this day is very rare for a person of Mary's age to be going back to school.
Right.
So in this case, we have a professor who's going after a student who's probably more age appropriate than probably the younger ones that he probably would go after, maybe.
But that's something that they did go after, is a lot of people think you can't go back to school. And let's face it, this still was the housewife era. Mm-hmm. And this was when you got Gloria Steinem. I think they brought her up once, too. And you had all these feminists coming out in the truest form of feminism, where they wanted equal pay, equal rights, and all this stuff, you know, not all this melee they want now. But
Bert said something very interesting, which I quite liked as well, that, you know, he's like, he wants to support her, but he says to her, he goes, you're going to become smarter and you're going to realize how dumb I am. And I thought that was quite interesting because that made it quite nice. It's like, okay, doesn't make Bert like, oh, I'm an asshole. So therefore you're not going to college or not that. But the reasoning behind it makes a little bit of sense. So I'm glad they went that route. Not the, you know what I mean? Don't try to better yourself. You'll never be better than that or anything like that. They went a different approach, but I thought it was a nice approach because normally in movies and shows around this time, And the woman goes, I want to go back to college. And the man would be against it because like, oh, who's going to clean my clothes or who's going to clean the house? And they didn't do that. And I thought that was quite good.
I thought it was nice that they approached it because women were starting to go back to school again. And there's nothing wrong with going back to school. There's always classes I look online. It's like, oh, that looks good. You know, nothing wrong with going back to school at all. I mean, you're never too old to stop learning. If anything, that's what we need more of these days, more learning. Yeah.
Learning the right stuff.
The right stuff. Yeah. And all the crazy crap.
Not liberal arts degree.
Not like basket weaving. Basket weaving.
Because that's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah. 4 years. Yeah, that was just 4 years of having fun, you know? But let's see. Okay. Tim thinks he's cursed because his mother died. So everything happened. You got the chandelier falling in front of Benson. So,
well, this is foreshadowing, which I think when we do our next episode of Soap, we're gonna actually realize how cursed they are.
Yeah.
So you know, we can't get into that now, but
no.
It's a bit of foreshadowing that's coming because we do start doubling up our episodes after the in season 5. So which is the next couple months. So.
I'll never be leaving that between that and Dark Shadows. I'll never have to be able to leave the house. It's just like I'm going to be bathing, watching Soap and Dark Shadows.
Bewitched.
Yeah. Yeah. But thank God they're all like 20 something minute episodes without the commercial. So all's well. I just plug it in and watch. Yeah. Okay. Got Dutch romantically climbing in Eunice's window to be her midnight lover. But I think wasn't her brother in there? Or she was talking to her brother, and then she noticed that he was outside, and then she's trying to get rid of him.
Yeah. She goes, I think it's all, we should spend time together. All our family's full of idiots, and does it run in the family? Billy's like, and Elaine goes, no, it doesn't run in the family. He goes, oh, you know, basically they're having like a tender moment, and then Elaine sees, oh, you have to go now.
I know. He comes in, and he sees Dutch there and climbs up on his back and tries to beat him up and realizes. And yeah, they use the word rape quite a bit between them. Why don't you, or something like, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want to rape you or something like that.
Yeah, well, when Dutch first shows up in her bedroom.
I'm a murderer, not a rapist.
Yeah, I'm a murderer and a rapist. And he goes, I wouldn't rape you anyway. And she goes, well, you wouldn't want to, you know, no, you wouldn't want to rape me because I was fat and buck tooth. And what they used to call her?
I can't remember now. Oh my God.
And he was, and the thing is, she was called something. I can't, sad because it was quite funny. But then when he was younger, he was skinny and scrawny. So they used to call him Worm.
Yeah. Worm and what? Oh, that's going to bug me now. So, why can't I remember that?
And I think they kind of bonded over that.
And yeah. They fell in love really quick.
Yeah. And he said that if he was a rapist, he would rape her.
That's true. To make her feel better. You know? Everybody needs a good raping once in a while, I guess. Oh, here comes the Me Too movement after me. let's see. Danny tells Elaine how he really feels about her. And that's where you get Mary telling Danny that maybe if he's nice to Elaine, she'll straighten out. And that's where we were talking about that in the beginning about what a great scene that was with Dinah Manoff and Danny. And they had that one moment, and it was really kind of sad because it wasn't a funny moment at all. He actually feels bad for her, and then he falls in love with her. But the funny part about it is that now that they see each other in a new light, and Chester survives his brain surgery only to have memory loss, we have the horny secretary that's after Bert and Danny.
that was a bit weird because the thing is that she comes down to Danny.
Yeah.
And then Danny said, no, I'm married, and he's happily married, and he's da-da-da. So he walks out. And then she says the same exact lines to Bert. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? Because it's not like, you know what I mean? She's like, just straight. It's like, what is she? So I think there's something else going on there. Because it's like, I don't know. It just seems a bit weird. Because, I mean, it'd be like me going, oh, Vicky, you're so attractive, da da da. And you're like, I come on to you. And then you turn me down. And then the next person comes in and I say the exact same thing.
Yeah. People that actually do that. They'll do anything to get laid, especially.
Yeah, but she was like, But she was like using the words love and all this other stuff. So it's
yeah,
like,
she thinks he's cute. And he's a very virile man. I don't know if I could ever do a scene with him because he's just funny. I mean, you know, some of the stuff as we talked to a couple of the people that were on the show with him, he's just very, what's the word I want to use?
He just spontaneous.
He comes up with stuff. I mean, that wasn't scripted. And I mean, just his way he shakes and makes those funny noises and the look on his face, I would just be dying. I mean, how do you get through a scene? It's like Burt Convy trying to get through his, you know, not Burt Convy, but Carol Burnett, you know, how they're trying to get through that.
And you can see them. I mean, the thing is, there's one point where she actually, you saw her kind of smile a little bit during it.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was wondering if maybe that was just, you know, yeah. She was smiling. That would be hard to do. That would. Just
I mean, she's very good, but you do kind of wonder what's going on with her character. So that's going to be interesting to see how that.
Yeah, I think something's going on with that. I haven't figured out.
I think it's more than she just wants to have sex. She wants something.
You can tell by the end of the episode where her last scene was that she's sitting there with a knowing kind of look on her face, like she had accomplished what she was trying to set out to do. So yeah. I don't know what's going on with her. What did she play in? What is her name? I can't stand it when I can't remember somebody. She's been in other sitcoms and whatnot.
Yeah. Almost everyone in the show.
Yeah. Her name's eluding me, but for some reason.
Elaine's father's played by Boss Hogg from Dukes.
Yeah,
Hazzard.
Boss. Yeah, that's true. I forgot. I was wondering. It's like, God, where did I see him before?
Cantor is Ron Rifkin, the doctor. Yeah. Ron Rifkin, normally, you know, he was like a lawyer, like in Law and Order and all those other stuff. That's what he's done. That's what he does now. So it's like, it's kind of funny seeing all these people. And it's like, God, they've had like, even the, like the people that they come in doing like one or two, a character and then disappear after an episode or two. There's like, God, they've all had careers. Like, and you start looking at like the credits. It's like, oh my God. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a who's who.
Right.
They got a lot of great people coming through the show.
Yeah, they do. They do. And that's what makes it sort of interesting. Sort of like I got Asher watching Sharknado. He wants to watch all of them now. And all the stars that actually wanted to get in on Sharknado, they're just dumb as hell, but they're funny to watch.
I've watched all of them.
I know. It's just like there's a new one coming out, and I noticed that's why they're pushing them. There's a sixth one coming out. I just think it's funny how they get certain individuals, you know, to come onto the show and get in there. And they always end up getting killed if they're nameworthy or noteworthy. Like, who was that? What was his name? He was an airplane. Oh my God.
Robert Hayes.
He was the pilot in airplane movies.
Oh, Robert Hayes.
Yeah. They had him in there. He was flying the plane and the sharks were coming.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Sharknado is that I tend to watch every once in a while, you know, if I got a few minutes, I'll end up going down that YouTube wormhole. You know, if you look at one thing and it leads to something else.
Yes, yeah.
And they have this one guy, one channel that does that looks at disaster films and about the likelihood of these things happening. So they do Twister and they do Deep Impact and, you know, Day After Tomorrow and so on and so forth. And then they do Sharknado as well about the likelihood of this happening. So it's kind of funny.
Well, what's funny? Well, it's really if you get water spouts, it has happened. I don't know about sharks but they have dumped fish offshore.
You know,
they picked them up in Oklahoma and dumped them in North Texas, some of these storms. So it's weird. I mean, weird shit like that does happen. Yeah.
But can you imagine like Sharknado if it's real?
Oh, God, that's funny. I have to find that now just because.
Yeah, it was quite funny. I mean, they have these like weatherologists and these scientists talking about it sort of thing.
So, that's
kind of funny because you go like, oh, okay, it's like, oh, this can't happen. Deep Impact, this can't happen because there's not a volcano in California. Kind of that kind of stuff. And like, but you know, but if it did happen, no, you couldn't do this. And then, so you're watching this and all of a sudden it's like the last one's like, Sharknado's like, what?
Sharknado. More like Salmon NATO or Carp NATO. Yeah. But
well, they do that. That frog thing happens, doesn't it? Where
yeah,
all these frogs fall from the sky, sort of thing.
No, it's because of bad inclement weather somewhere else. But it's interesting. It's interesting, needless to say. But let's see. Bat Chester. Okay, we got the Tates visit Chester in the hospital. And that's where we get the impending doom from Jody and Carol talking to Carol's father. who says that word that even I don't use because I got a lot of gay, especially gay male friends. I could never, they call each other that, but I just never, it's sort of like the N word. I could never call somebody that, but
I think it's a word that, I think that gays used to use towards each other, but I don't think they do anymore. I think they decide to, you know, I think they decided to that if we don't want anyone using that word anymore, stop, we won't use that word ourselves, and that kind of devalues the word. And I think it's pretty much that the word's kind of falling out of the vocabulary nowadays. It's like, you know,
I
you
noticed
don't,
that they cut it out of the Dire Straits song. They don't play like that one with the, I want my MTV. He uses it several times in a lyric, and I noticed that if it's on regular radio, they cut it out. But if it's that whole stanza, and if it's on like Spotify or something, they don't cut it out.
Well, but Spotify is the actual recording of it, sort of thing.
Yeah,
I mean, but I think it's, you know, I think it's one of those words. That's probably like the N word, probably sort of thing. If they stop using it, and then chances are probably would be a word that dies. And I think you know, I think it's kind of a dead word now. I don't think
it's kind of a dead word now.
Well, gays don't even use it anymore. So I think that's what happens. I think that if you don't want a word used, then the people that word's aimed at has to stop using that word themselves.
Because it doesn't roll off my tongue. It just doesn't.
Well, I do think that if something happens, and let's say that, you know, if you got a word that's derogatory towards a group of people, and that group of people that's derogatory against use it all the time for each other, it kind of gives you a license for other people that they can use it then. Do you know what I mean?
And, yeah, you know, they I do, quite a bit,
but it gives other people think they have a license. But if the group of people that is derogatory against stop using it and don't use it for against each, say get to about it each other, then the word finally dies. I don't hear gays using it anymore at all.
I don't hear anybody really using it. The last time I think I was watching Blazing Saddles, I heard it there, and they use the N-word in there. You know, it's really funny if you want to see something funny, because everybody says that Blazing Saddles really causes a lot of racial undercurrents. There's on YouTube black people watching Blazing Saddles for the first time, and they are dying. They're laughing. Okay. So people were upset about
The thing is, the black guy is not the joke. It's the white people who are stupid that are the joke.
Yeah. And they were making fun of the stupid people, basically.
You know, and it's a bit like soap. I mean, the thing is, the soap is like, it's when they're making fun of something or anything like that,
fun of the racists and the bigots, because look at Benson, you know, but
he's all in the family, same thing. The joke wasn't Archie Bunker. Oh, I want to be like Archie Bunker. The joke was Archie Bunker is such a racist and he's such a hypocrite and he's so horrible that I don't want to be like that. So
right.
Because he's such a horrible person, I'm going to make sure that I'm not like that. And that's why these kind of work. And that's why I think comedy works a lot better, because it does. It does make you woke without being preached at.
Yeah. It gets the point across without being an asshole. And it is funny. And I mean, if you find something that when you're laughing at something, it's like, God, this is stupid, isn't it? I think it works a lot better than.
Well, I think you learn a lot more through comedy than you do through drama. Personally.
I think so. I really think so.
You know, it's a bit like you learn more. I learned more through Schoolhouse Rock than I did in history class. You know, it's true though, isn't it? 2, 3, the magic number.
Yeah. Now the electric, remember the electric company? That's where I learned to count.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah. Oh my God. We're going to bring you the power. Oh my God. It's scary how I remember all that shit.
A lot of stars.
Huh?
Electric company. I mean, looking back on it, it's like if you look at electric company, you see they had a lot of stars on there. Rita Moreno and
Well, look at Sesame Street. They did too.
Yeah.
What was it? Was there another one? Because way before Barney the Dinosaur.
Well, Pee Wee Herman had whatchamacallit in it. Who's the black actor who was in The Matrix?
Oh, shoot.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne started off in Pee Wee's Big
Adventure. Yes, he did. Oh, no. Of all the, yeah.
He was the cowboy, wasn't he?
Yes. Was.
And Morgan Freeman started out in Electric Company.
You know, Morgan Freeman wasn't even an actor until his 50s. So there's hope for everybody. If Morgan Freeman can break through the confines of whatever to be ageism, racism, and he did it. So there's no excuse for anybody.
Wasn't he 80 years old and his wife caught him having an affair?
I don't know. Really? I guess he did. A couple years ago.
It was a thing on, I don't know how big of a thing it was, but it was a little bit of a thing that I think the media tried to stir, but I don't think he reacted to it. So it kind of went away really quickly, but it was quite funny. He's like, oh, yeah, I think it was more like, gee, he's 80. I think he's like 85, 84, 85 or something like that.
Now I've got to look.
And he had an affair. And I think instead of like the media, like everyone goes, oh my God, that's horrible. Everyone's like, oh, good on you.
Jesus. he was born in 1937, so that would make him, yeah, my parents are 89, mine is five, I'm about 82, 83.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's a virile man.
And he's still kicking it.
Yeah.
So much for late starts in life. Keep you healthy, I guess. Mm. But let's see, we got the Elaine and Deb. That was how it really ended, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had the Tates visit Chester in the hospital, and we got Jody and Carol with her bigot father, Mr. David, who is he played football, and that name's going to elude me, too. I'm going to have to start looking this stuff up. I totally forget. They have some big names in a lot of these. But you got Sally still trying to seduce Bert. I can't wait to figure out where we're going to go with that.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. So,
but it was a quick watch for all these, because these were a lot of fun, I thought. So what'd you think about this block?
I covered a couple more episodes on YouTube because I kind of watched one after another, and I thought, so yeah. So I actually know what's going to happen in the next two episodes. But
I know a few things are going to happen by memory. I was just trying to keep it, you know, sort of like Dark Shadows when you're younger. At least I was a little. I remember my brothers used to watch soap because they thought it was so funny. They watched it just because of Bert. Yeah. And the ventriloquist. We didn't bring him up. What a punk he was through all this.
I had to say that I was a bit. I love Chuck and Bob.
Oh yeah.
But I had to sit there and say that there wasn't a. He was there, but there wasn't a lot of interaction with him. He kind of was passing through the scenery a little bit. So
they did make that one comment where Bob got really drunk at the wedding.
Yeah. And it's been like about. You know, about dating, that Chuck's going for a date. Bob go, you need to take me with you. And if you don't, then fine, I'm not doing the audition. So you got a little bit of that. And then
he never gets to go by himself. He has to bring Bob. Oh, wait, who throws him out the window? Somebody throws Bob out the window.
It's Benson.
Benson threw him out the window. Okay. Yeah,
I love it when Bob and Chuck have so many one-liners, but I felt the one-liners haven't been as good as they were in our previous episodes. They were good, but when I see Bob, I just expect to laugh all the time, and I kind of like that a little bit. I kind of laughed a little bit, but not big belly laughs like I normally do.
Bob is creepy. I always thought those things were creepy. I love Bob, but I still think it's creepy, and it's really weird watching the show as a viewer. You start thinking of him as human, and he's got his own persona, and it's just like, oh my God, it's a dummy. So you see how easy it is for them to interact with him. It's just funny because he's like a whole other character. Mm. I mean, that's how good this guy is. I wonder whatever happened to him. I'm going to have to check that out.
He does shows in Vegas and stuff. He's still around.
We should
probably try to get him on our show at some point. So.
Well, that's a good idea. I'm sure people, but maybe he'll bring Bob. Oh my God, what a riot.
I want an interview with Chuck and Bob.
Oh my God. Yeah. We got to see Chuck and Bob. That would be a riot. Oh my God. I thought it was more soapy, this block. because they were starting to hit a lot of what they're making fun of soap operas. That's what it's about. Because you have the comas, you have the breakouts, you have the pregnancy, you have the gay thing going on. And you just have all, you've got all kinds of stuff going. You got the psychotic doctor who probably needs more help than Chester. You know, then you got Benson on the other hand.
We had a lot more tender moments as well in this as well than you normally
do. Well, you had it between Bert and Mary, Bert and Elaine, Elaine and Danny.
Jessica and Chester, Jessica and Corinne. Jessica.
And then you got all the women at the table talking about that. It wasn't, it was a light moment, but it was a real moment because women do talk about that shit. I don't care what they say. I've sat in on conversations with women that were downright pornographic. You know, it just, we are just as bad as the guys sometimes. So anybody that says they haven't is not telling you the truth. But I guess this is the end of a Literary License podcast retrospective of Soap season 2, episode 25 to 32. And tune in next time. We'll be discussing our classic novel for the month of August, which is Moby Dick by Herman Melville. And we'll be also doing the movie Moby Dick of the same name. It's a 1956 film with Gregory Peck, and it's directed by John Huston. And Moby Dick will be playing himself. And what I didn't know was Ray Bradbury wrote the screenplay. I did not know that. That was interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I read the book. I just got to see the movie now.
Yeah, I didn't know about Ray Bradbury till I started digging around a little bit. So it's good night from myself, Vicky Ray, and good night to everybody. You all take care of each other. And good night from Keith.
Good night, y'all. See you next time.
Y'all. And good night. Have a good one.
Finally found a fella, almost completely divine. But his vocabulary is killing this romance of mine. We get into an intimate situation. And then begins this Romeo's conversation. He says, murder, he says. Every time we kiss, he says, murder, he says. At a time like this, he says, murder, he says. Is that the language of love? He says, solid, he says. Takes me in his arms, he says, solid, he says. Meaning all my charms, he says, solid, he says. Is that the language of love? He says, a chick, chick, you torture me. Zoop, are we living? I'm thinking of leaving him flat. He says, dig, dig, the jumps the old ticker is given. He can't talk plainer than that. He says, murder, he says. Every time we kiss, he says, murder, he says. At a time like this, he says, murder, he says. In that impossible time, it will bring on nobody's murder but his own. He says, Jackson, he says. And my name's Marie, he says, Jackson, he says. Shoot the snoot to me, he says, Jackson, he says. Is that the language of love? He says, whoop, whoop, he says. When he likes my hat, he says, he says. What the heck is that? He says, woo, woo, he says. Is that the language of love? He says, a hep, hep with helium now, babe. We're cooking in other expressions to wit. He says, we're in de groove, and de groove is good looking. He sounds like his uppers don't fit. He says, murder. He says, murder. And away he says, murder. In an impossible time. I've told him over and over and over again that it'll be nobody. somebody else's murder. Bye, bye.